Welcome, Red Eyes members. Thank you for joining us here as we are talking with Cliff High, a very interesting discussion about the WebWatch project and future studies, the shape of things to come. And we are going to talk more about the future and upcoming events here in the second hour. The implications of this, again, are incredibly interesting, if it is indeed is a way to look into future events, or at least have the opportunity to interpret the data about the future, or the language about the future. And Cliff, although you guys are using advanced technologies, scripts and spiders and so forth, it's still up to the human being and the human mind to tap into the future. And you mentioned in the first hour that you think the human mind basically is an antenna. In terms of human psychic ability, is this something that you've always held, or have you come to realize this along the way as you were working with the WebBot?
I have held the idea pretty much all of my life that the world is not as has been told to us by our schooling, and it's been reinforced by the work we've done here. So, for instance, it's my particular view that atoms and molecules and such things are merely illusionary, and they don't really exist, and that we're, in fact, energetic beings that are the collision, in a very elegant way, of bazillions and bazillions of other energetic patterns. And an interesting way to look at it is to think of an empty universe, a single sound, the sound reverberating off the inside, if there could be such a thing of this empty universe, and colliding with itself over and over and over again ad infinitum. And we're actually these little nexuses of this energetic flux, if you will. And it's happening so fast that our 30 frames per minute minds are convinced that everything is solid. And in fact, nothing around us that appears to be solid is truly solid as we are meant to understand that concept. And this is pertinent because if we are in fact energetic beings that are simply the collision of all of these other energies at this particular level, then it makes a whole lot more sense that we can pick up energy from the future that's about to express. Whereas if we're a little composed of atoms that are, little rocks whizzing around in space and are a hard, finite thing that actually exists and persists, then it becomes a little bit more difficult to conceive of the idea of picking up energetic waves.
One thing that occurred to me in regards to talking about, paradoxes in terms of future and so forth, let's say that this thing becomes really, really big. A lot of people catch on, they start watching you for trends and start spreading that information about the web. Could it be that a feedback loop, so to speak, is created here where it's difficult to tell what is information about the future and what is speculation about the future based on things that you've already discovered, if you follow my train of thought there?
Oh, sure. I'm, in fact, certain that that will occur. And the point that it does occur, the whole thing has to shut down. There's this really strange movie. I think it was like Jimmy Stewart or somebody like that in the 40s or 50s. They made this film about the idea of finding. He was a pollster. He was one of the early guys who took polls of public opinion polls, and it was very expensive to poll the whole United States. And so they happened to find a statistical anomaly, which was this little tiny town where you got the perfect representation of the whole United States, and he could go there and in a matter of a few minutes poll the whole town extremely accurately and then find out how the whole country thought. And, of course, it was just a great scheme until the people in the town found out about it, and then the whole thing went to hell in a handbasket real quick. And I suspect that that's exactly what will occur here, is that at some point we'll reach a critical mass, enough people will become aware of their prescience and so on. But at that point, I also figure that the reports, et cetera, the whole technology, will be of very little use, because I think that that will be the point at which we cross this critical mass of awakened humans.
Tell us more about that. That is really interesting. So do you think that that will mean that we become conscious of our future, or will we still be in a situation where we need to access technology to interpret our own unconscious thoughts and ideas, pretty much? Or what can you say about it more?
I don't know in detail, and it'd be a lot of speculation there. I do suspect that, linguistically, we even have within our work, we have a prediction of about our work just to keep ourselves isolated, so to speak. And so we have this little model of model space, we call it. And it predicts where we're going to be at and stuff, and we've tightened it down to just our little project. And basically, we can see that at some point here within the next probably 19 months or so, there's going to be a huge paradigm shift in the midst of all of this chaos, and we may indeed get to the point where it won't be pertinent to make these kinds of predictions about the future at a planetary level, because the, and then from the because onward, we start getting into speculation. But it may be because the level of people that are consciously aware of their ability to participate in shaping the future rises to a critical mass, and therefore they actually start shaping that future.
That's really weird.
And I think that, yeah, I think that critical mass has to be explained a little bit here.
Yeah.
The idea comes from the some thinking that's done at the Army War College here in Leavenworth, Kansas, where they teach all the Army officers how to think about things in a strategic fashion. One of the things they like going into is the amount of human resources necessary to accomplish individual tasks. And they used to cite, I don't know if they still do, but they used to cite an interesting example, and that was the American Revolutionary War. And they said that the American Revolution, the split of the United States from controlled by Britain in the 1700s, was actually accomplished long before the war even started, and that they figured that it was accomplished fact that it would occur when some 3% of the populace of the United States at that time decided that it should occur, and that that 3%, it was this kind of snowball effect, and it would just happen regardless, and there might have been two or three or four wars as far as they were concerned at that point, but nonetheless, it was going to occur simply because 3% of the population was too large to kill off, couldn't identify them, they would continue to propagate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so at this point, I'm figuring that about 3% of the global population is about 180 million people. And when we reach the point where about 180 million people are aware of things and aware of how the paradigm is shifting, and they're starting to think in say, the next generation of concepts relative to physics and everything else, that at that point our work kind of will fall away because they'll be the leading edge of a much larger wave, which would indeed subsume our ability to separate our work from that, that feedback loop, that self-fulfilling prophecy part.
Is this in any way related to almost the phenomena of the 100th monkey effect or syndrome, that, that once it spreads to a number of people, so to speak, it will be known by the majority at that point? Do you think that that's what's happening here?
I think it is indeed related. I don't think we're dealing with a causative effect or anything. I think that there's an underlying energetic causality to both. So in my way of thinking about the universe, the following kind of thing occurs. Every 22 trillion times a second, there's this pulse that comes out from the middle of the universe. It jumps instantly to the middle of every galaxy because it travels beyond the realm of the manifestation of time. From the middle of every galaxy, it goes to the middle of every solar system. From the middle of every solar system, it goes to the middle of every object. And this is the underlying pulse that creates all of universe. Our brains can conceive of and see it at a second level and sometimes millisecond level, but we can never approach this 22 trillion times a second approach. But because it's so highly energetic, and because it is at a wave level, such things as the 100th monkey effect or the critical mass really probably represent more of a situation of 3% of the antenna attuned that they're picking up the wave just slightly ahead of all the rest of the antennas.
Hmm.
They're in my particular model of universe, there's...
Yeah, now I can hear again. You're back. You were just mentioning your model of the universe. Please take it from there.
Sure. In my model of the universe, the fact that we're all energetic beings provides support for the theory of the 100th monkey effect, or the idea of a spreading wave of knowledge, whether you actually participate in that knowledge or not. And that also would support the idea that the second generation behind you is able to absorb that knowledge easier and so on, because the wave of that knowledge is more or less standing in effect around them all that time. And so certainly I think that that's part of the processes that our work has to take into account.
Really, really interesting. And you mentioned the first American Revolution or the American Revolution, but there's a lot of people as well who are talking about a potential second American Revolution, and I guess the United States role in the larger scheme of things in where things are heading. We've seen, for instance, about a month ago, a couple of weeks now, 2 million people, for instance, marching on Washington and in protest of both Obama's health care, but also the economic situation we're in and so forth. Can you see anything in regards to where America is heading in the future, Cliff?
Revolution, insofar as the American Revolution, is not yet complete in my way of thinking. But whether we term it the Second American Revolution or not, the revolutionary wave has reappeared in the planetary populace. It's not limited to America, and very similar to the revolutionary wave that involved the French Revolution, the American Revolution et al., we're going to have another one of those waves that will indeed go around the whole planet. It'll start this January and February. In fact, it's already started, but it'll become very visible to everyone or to a larger majority of the populace in January and February. It's going to be rather nasty because the powers that be are going to be very brutal in their attempt to retain control because they figure they have nothing to lose and very short period of time in which to exercise their ability to alter the future.
Do you think we're talking about scenes that we've seen unfolded in terms of the G20 meeting in Pittsburgh? People are taken off in unmarked cars by military. People are talking about FEMA camps. Will this thing turn violent, do you think?
Oh, certainly. Unfortunately, that is the case. I think that not enough of the revolutionary movement that's coming through will be, I think it'll be too rapid, actually. I think that the revolutionary movement will explode too rapidly within the populace for it to be contained and be smart and develop into a nonviolent revolution. Plus, Americans have a tendency to be violent anyway, and we've got all kinds of weapons to that effect. So I think that the revolution within the United States will indeed be more violent than it need be, and probably is going to be much more violent than in other parts of the planet. But it's going to spread throughout the rest of the planet because it's not really a revolution against Obamacare or the economic situation that Obama can control. A lot of people may think he's at the top of the pyramid, but he's 27 layers down in security clearance, so he's 27 layers down in the line of control. And ultimately, the revolution will be against that top layer and will kind of bypass all the minion and the political elite class.
If we talk about outcome here, or the motive, or why people are doing this, are we talking about basically the overthrow of the New World Order system here, or what do you see that this is?
You can look at it a couple different ways. If you want to look at it at the mundane political level, you're indeed talking about just that, the overthrow of the New World Order system, because there's enough people on the planet at the moment that we can no longer afford to pay for a political elite that doesn't have to work, so to speak. So everybody on the planet works except for the political elite, the royals, the religious elite, and they eat at our expense. This is going to become too critical over these next couple of years for us to allow that, simply because of the pressure on everybody being able to eat is going to become too great. But at the same time, we're also going through a period of time that Gurdjieff referred to as the Solilunius, and that is external energies from outer space, so to speak, are making their impact felt on our solar system and indeed upon us, because here we are as those vibrating antennae. So it is true at one level anyway to think that the revolutionary trend originates off planet and is perhaps part of our galactic alignment kind of a thing.
Really interesting. And so in terms of the whole 2012 discussion here, is there additions that you can make to that discussion? I think a lot of people who are listening to this program will be aware of what we're referring to when we mention that date, and I guess that you have a pretty good eye on it yourself. Many people predict doom and gloom, obviously. If you talk about transformation of the human consciousness, pretty much even down to the level of our DNA changing and so forth, what can you add to that, or would you agree with what is being what the consensus is out there about this subject?
I'm not really aware of a consensus. I am aware of a number of burgeoning centers of thought around it, and I'm pretty much in tune with a lot of them. My personal thing is that I'm real paranoid about it because I observe the macro-level changes in my environment, the sun shifting over from yellow to white over the last 12, 15 years, the increase in intensity, and so on. So there is certainly something there. I don't know that I would characterize it as doom and gloom because I have a tendency to think of everything as a challenge, good or bad. And it's just a matter of dealing with those challenges. It's a much saner way of looking at the universe, in my opinion. But from the people that want to think of it as doom and gloom, they're going to get plenty of challenges that will meet their definition, I'm sure. I don't know about the idea of standing DNA changing or the idea of an ascension from a vibratory state in a material world. Let me state that, indeed, there may be a giant energy wave that comes from the center of the galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, that we happen to align with, and it indeed may send out such an energetic wave as to cause our DNA to transform, so to speak, into a greater level of density. But in my way of thinking, that means instantaneous death, because our existent three D material body is tied to consciousness in a way that does not require the body if it's going to ascend to another level of density.
Yeah.
So in other words, no, I don't think people are going to be transported into some form of new golden age in their current 3D body into a fourth density or fourth, fifth density, that kind of thing. On the other hand, the instantaneous death and transmission into a higher level of consciousness on Mars as a result of a giant wave might even create a whole new being, in the sense that there's some suggestion from really ancient records that there's a critical mass of humanity at around 10 billion of us, because that represents an analog, a fractal analog, of the number of cells in an individual brain.
Yes.
And so when there's 10 billion people on the planet, maybe indeed consciousness as a whole alters, because basically we're all sharing consciousness as energetic particles, or not particles, but as standing waves of energy manifesting to our limited minds as particles. We're nonetheless all sharing the same consciousness wave simultaneously. So we're basically all the same critter. And who knows how that critter will tend to manifest if we get enough of us. And it may indeed be that it's this weird kind of a race to get 10 billion humans before the nut jobs want to cut us back down to 500 million kind of a thing.
Well, that's a good point to mention that. And what do you see in terms of, if we maybe tie all of these subjects together, people are talking about potential Earth changes that could potentially be triggered by, just as you suggested, changes in the sun, solar flares, CMEs, etc., the new cycle that the sun is entering into, expected to peak around 2011 to 2013, something like that. And it looks to me, from my perspective, that a lot of governments and so forth are preparing for events, going underground, building seed vaults, etc. Is this something that you see and can see as well in terms of the WebWatch clip?
Yes, that's correct. We have it at two different levels. We have the forecast of two solar events, one in early 2012, maybe very late 2011. It's hard for us to differentiate at this stage because the level of granularity. And then another one in late or early spring of 2013. And it'll be the larger of the two would hit in 2013. They appear, now, I say we have it at two levels. We have that within what we call our Terra entity, where we make forecasts about Earth changes and so on. And that's where we get our data that references such things as the tsunami. On the other hand, we also are able to track that same level of solar influences on the planet for at least two different shots, if you will, from the sun, from the fear language within the powers that be entity. So here we have a forecast from our Terra entity that it will occur, and then subsequent to that, we can find a separate thread of fear language within the powers that be entity that suggests that they're afraid that that will occur. Mm. And so this appears to be one of the things that they are attempting to prepare against. Now, there's another component to all of this, and that is the following, that we've got within our Terra entity and within our Space Goat Farts entity, which is where we throw all of our unknown and all the officially denied subject matter like UFOs, space aliens, that kind of thing. Within those two entities, we've had a number of years now, we've had this developing thing that we eventually called the Big Squeeze. And it's a linguistic structure that suggests that the sine wave motion of our solar system around the ecliptic edge of the Milky Way, up and down over a 26 to 27,000 year cycle, is potentially going to not continue after 2012. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that the world is going to end or anything, but there's a suggestion within this Big Squeeze linguistics that something radical is going to occur, and that the radical nature of that is that the solar system that we call home will finally bond with the Milky Way. And it turns out that if you look at a lot of the stuff from the European Space Agency and from NASA, you find that the infrared photos suggest that there's some support for this idea, because it turns out that our solar system is not really part of the Milky Way, that what we're part of is what's known as the Sagittarius Dwarf B galaxy that's been consumed by the Milky Way galaxy for the last 600 million years as they sort of collided, and the Milky Way galaxy is taking off bits and pieces from Sagittarius the way that a carnival fellow will pick up spun candy or cotton candy on a stick in little bits at a time, and it sort of stays in its form. Yeah. So here's the issue. The big squeeze says that we're in an area of magnetism that is at the ecliptic of the Milky Way. This would takes 20 years for our solar system across this band of magnetism. The magnetism is larger than is found within our solar system, so it has a tendency to override and crush down all the magnetics that we find within our solar system. And indeed, we see such things as the heliosphere and the heliopause. These giant magnetic bubbles around our solar system are being crushed back down, or they're reduced. There's no official word as to why that reduction occurs, and our scientists think of it as they're weakening. I would prefer to think of them as being overwhelmed by the larger magnetism from outside. In any event, here's the remainder part of the theory. Our data suggests that we're at a bifurcation point, and that in 2012, which is the midway point of this 20-year passage of the ecliptic, we may actually become captured. That would tend to be supported by the Mayans' idea that at the end of the fifth world, there would be no further worlds. In other words, we wouldn't continue this sine wave motion up and down the ecliptic. We would just join the Milky Way galaxy, and things would be different from that point on forever, because we wouldn't be spinning around it. We would be part of it. Now, our data also shows that there's some small possibility that we'll continue on this sine wave journey and not bond with the Milky Way. And that actually turns out to be the one that has the most detailed forecast for Earth changes, because the idea is that as we leave this area of intense magnetism, as everything lets up, releases back to its old way, we're going to get the sort of the dog shaking the water off his back and the fleas are hanging on for dear life kind of effect as Earth and the sun and everything kind of relaxes from this giant big squeeze. That's where we stand with that view insofar as our data.
Wow. And the latter, what would that mean in terms of, if we talk about it in terms of the potential, spiritual and changing effects in human awareness and so forth? If we talk about the latter, do you think that we will I guess I can rephrase it and ask like this. Do you think that what we're potentially facing here then is two different evolutionary paths to take, so to speak, and this is dependent on whether or not we will be part of the bigger Milky Way galaxy or if we continue on our own, so to speak? Is that the case here?
That's indeed the case. If we were to continue on our own, there are two separate tracks. There's a known forecasted kind of a pathway. That a lot of that arises from the Vedic and the Tibetan and other long-term traditions where they speak of the time that we went through the last of these cycles, because they're of the opinion that the passage through the central part of the Milky Way bombards us with energy, whether it's photons or whatever, it doesn't really matter. For a period of time, it does indeed, boost things here on our solar system in the way of consciousness evolution. And so there will be some of that, albeit temporary. But from their viewpoint, if we continue on in this sine wave journey around the ecliptic from the period of time of 2012 onward until about 2019 thereabouts, we're going to get into a period of time of increasing earthquakes, CMEs, all kinds of activity on all of the planets as it readjusts to coming out of this magnetism and gains energetic equilibrium. And that might mean a period of weeks or months of daily 7.0 earthquakes where you happen to live. It's going to get extraordinary. It could actually indicate whole continents that would subside, whole continents that would rise up. It would account for such things as the Atlantean legends and all of that. Now, on the other side, if we get trapped in the Milky Way, there are no historical or ancient record prophetical kind of things that suggest what that outcome is likely to be. But given that it would be a more permanent a focus, if you will, of this energetic new material from the center of the galaxy, it might indeed mean a qualifiable and quantifiable change in consciousness for everything. So, but we just, you know, we've never been there before, and there just does not appear to be any speculation about what would occur.
Let's say we have a miss, quote unquote, here. Then this time around, do you think that will mean that we'll pass once more around another 26,000 years approximately, and then we get another shot, so to speak, to join into the bigger galaxy, or how do you see the outcome of that?
Well, there's another issue there as well. The 26,000-year cycle is based on our sine wave motion, but the ability to join the galaxy only exists when that sine wave motion coincides with one of the arms from the Milky Way galaxy. In other words, you wouldn't join the galaxy in the gap between the arms. And so the next time that the sine wave motion would join to would tie up in the middle of the of another one of these galactic arms would be about, I think, 100 and it would be several cycles, so it would be in the order of over 150,000 years from now. And we have to also understand that this particular time, when we're coming down the sine wave arc, so to speak, into the ecliptic here and approaching that midpoint in 2012, we're at the most dense part of the third minor arm, minor spiral arm of of the Milky Way galaxy, which is a very fat little arm and very dense, this particular layer that we're coming down through it. The next time that would align like that, as I say, is at least 150,000 years in the future. So it's not going to be the hit or miss business gives us a long time to contemplate it.
Indeed. But in any case, whatever happens here, be it one or the other, does this mean a huge die off on the planet in terms of not only humans but also animals, nature, etc., as well?
Yes, that's pretty much confirmed at the moment. Whether or not humans go as a species is open to speculation at this point. Some significant amount of humans will indeed die off over the next few years as we encounter the planetary stresses that are forcing all of the other species to die off. We're apparently, so far, we're in an extinction event that is as large as the sixth largest extinction event that we've encountered in the past. We may well rise up to the first or second level. We just don't know how bad it's going to be at this stage. But it's it also coincides with the 62 to 65 million year cycle in the evolutionary fossil record that indicates that these extra energies from space, or unknown energies from space, as we like to call them, indeed are in some way connected directly to the existence of new species. So this is one of those good and bad things, right?
Yes.
Not necessarily good for humans, but the planet is not at risk, and life is probably not at risk, although the human species may well be at risk.
But there's nothing really we can do about this in terms of considering the forces that we're facing here, so to speak. We just along for the ride, and all we can do is enjoy it and do the best we can, right? Or is there safe spots on the planet? Is there indeed, does it make sense, as most governments seem to have done, going underground and so forth? Do you see that that's a possible way of saving humans?
I don't buy into that for a number of different reasons. The idea that the way I understand life and relative to the energetic field and the fact that we're not little atoms whizzing around in space means that to a certain extent, hiding in a hole in the ground won't lengthen your life one day at all. If your karma says you're due to die in that particular day, believe me, universe will find a way to make that occur. Just as though the opposite is also true. So you can be absolutely fearless in battle, because if you're not destined to die that day, there is no force in universe that will be able to separate you from universe. So it gives you kind of a nice freedom here. It also means that I am also against the idea of going underground, because something that the governments are certainly not taking into account is that the human body is, insofar as fertility is concerned, is 100% intimately connected with the sun. And we've got studies that show that if you take fertile women and men and shove them underground for 40 days, they become infertile. So the idea of long-term survival underground is absurd. And it certainly is only a one-generation issue. And you could come on back out, and then there is a time lag. The longer you are underground, the longer that time lag in fertility exists. Plus, the fertility of the species is controlled to a great degree by these inner sun variations. There's, in fact, three spheres that turn in the giant thing that we call the sun, and they line up to perform certain tasks relative to the human fertility. So all of the infertility issues we've had over these past 30 years or so, as science is trying to overcome them, and we have the fertility clinics and so on, is a response to what the sun is doing, not the pollution in the atmosphere or the pollution on our planet, as is often cited. And it's kind of like going against a universal trend. So, no, I'm not a big fan of the go dig a giant hole. I don't think it'll help. And if karma works the way that I think it does, a lot of those people going into that big giant hole are going to get a rather rude awakening.
I love that answer, by the way, in regards to underground and the studies that have been done on human fertility. That's absolutely right. And do you think that, what about technology? Could that aid them in this effort, in this situation, to try to save themselves? We could talk about it in terms of cloning or some other kind of technology, artificial insemination, etc. We can go extend this very far. But do you think that technology will aid these people who are attempt to bypass their karmic outcome, so to speak?
No. I know that there's a lot of work on the level of the powers that be to figure out the mechanisms of karma and see if they can't alter them to their personal benefit, sort of cheat at the game, if you will. And I know that they are indeed working on all different kinds of techniques, none of which will continue long. So it's kind of a wasted effort. They're very short-sighted in their vision. They can see only, they're clever, they're not really smart. And no, I don't think the technology will pull them out. But also, correspondingly, I'm not a believer in the idea that the space aliens the beings that have shown up and represented themselves as being our descendants from the future in a degraded DNA state, it does not seem credible to me. Because once you get into cloning and this kind of an issue, you don't have that level of degradation at a macro level. And the universe is basically a fractal kind of a thing. It's organized along certain rules that work upwards as well as downward along the fractal path. And one of the fractal things that we deal with continuously is mutation and the tendency at a macro level towards complexity. So I find it incredible, non-believable, that humans trapped in a cave somewhere, even over thousands of years, using cloning would end up turning into these gray creatures. And in fact, I find that the statements to that effect of, oh, the poor grays are back here for their DNA to help them solve their DNA problems is just a giant lie and is being promulgated at all different levels for various different reasons. But at its core, I don't find credible. And then if you look into history, you find out that, geez, the Nag Hammadi, among other documents, says, hey, watch out for these grays. They're lying bastards, and they're going to spin you a whole line that isn't true.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. You know, so you're saying that we're dealing with something else or someone else in terms to all the stories about the grays and the abductions, the genetic harvesting of genetic material that seems to be taking place.
Whatever they're doing, harvesting the genetic material and so forth, is not as we've been allowed to believe through the leaks that they're attempting to repair humanity in the future. The idea is just absurd on its face. 47,000 years of complexity increases do not yield that from us. And in fact, there's another way of looking at universe, which goes back to the Jain side of the Vedic literature, which suggests that you look at everything first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth orders. And so, for instance, a fourth order being is like a insects. All insects of a particular category, genus, family, species, etc., all basically look alike. You can't tell one dung beetle from another, mostly. And so that has a tendency to suggest that all these beings that look alike, as are the grays and being clones, they're a fourth order being from an older level of universe before the complexity has extended itself to the fifth order beings, which is ourselves. And thus, the level of complexity increase would be towards a greater level of complexity, not a reduced one.
So what you're saying, I guess, in one way, is that the grays are potentially a lower order, so to speak, here than us?
They predate us. Lower can be prejudicial in terms of our thinking. We don't want to think of them as stupid or anything.
Yeah.
But they do not express complexity and individuality the way we have it.
That is really interesting. So we could... Do you think that, and I do, again, I don't know if this discussion specifically veers away from in what data you bring out from the WebBot project, but let's leave that to the side for now because it's interesting as it is. Do you think that what do you think that the grays are and that they are up to then? Do you have any speculation about that? Do you think that they are indeed in cahoots with governments in order to, I don't know, this story about technology in exchange for the governments here on Earth allowing certain amounts of abductions to take place, et cetera? Any comments on that?
Sure. It seems quite plausible, given especially the nature of acquisitive humans, the rise of the acquisitive human dominance at this particular time in history, because bear in mind, human societies go through waves in which they're dominated by various different types. There's the explorer types, the protector types, the Hannibals and that kind of a society. And then there's the intellectual types that discover new forms of ways of being, and then they go through the acquisitive type, and then it starts all over again, and we get into another level of exploration. But the acquisitive types have been popping up since about the 30s and have been in dominance certainly since the 50s in the American society, and as it's impressed itself on the rest of the world, they've also been in dominance then. So acquisition has been our main deal, more for me, more money, et cetera, and that's reflected at a macro level within government. So it certainly makes sense that if there were an opportunity to, quote, make a deal, it would have been done in this particular period of time.
Yeah.
And then the idea that the government would accept that deal makes a lot of sense as well, simply because they couldn't stop the abductions if they tried, and better they should sort of try and control them a bit and get something out of them would be their rationale. They wouldn't think of being asymmetric and approaching this from an entirely different viewpoint, but that's an aside. And so it all makes perfect sense, and here's the real kicker from my viewpoint. We like to look at things at a very holistic level, look from the larger and gradually go down so far that we can ascertain that the larger gives us the context that we want within the nature of the WebBot work that we do. And if we apply that to reality, then you can say to yourself, none of this makes sense if I take space aliens or grays or whatever out of the picture. Mm. None of the actions of the military and the U.S. government and the military-industrial complex since probably 1913 makes any sense at all if I take them out of the picture. But if I put them back into the picture, it all not only makes sense, it's a crystal clarity of perfection of making sense. Now, it doesn't mean that the individual components are logical or any of that. It just means that everybody's behavior and how they're acting certainly makes a lot of sense. And it also kind of fits in with all of our data sets that are coming out about the idea that within a couple of years here in 2011, alien wars will be a fact of life for the people of the planet. That is to say that our data seems to suggest that by the middle of 2011, the issue of contact will be an accomplished fact. Everybody in their mind will accept contact as part of our planetary consensus. And that contact may get to the point where there are space aliens walking around among us as tourists. I just don't know. We don't have enough detail at this level.
How are things like... Because I'm also thinking here about in terms of different, how should we say, how we are infected with memes or trains of thoughts and so forth. For instance, I was looking at the movie District 9 the other day, and it reminds me very much of what you're saying here. We have some kind of, little spot on the planet where we have a refugee, alien race pretty much walking around. So I'm sitting there looking at this on a movie theater, a fiction story, so to speak. Does that infect into the information that you're searching for as well, meaning that it will be difficult to know what is real and what isn't in terms of entertainment that we're getting?
There's at one level that is true, but in the majority it is not. So it is true that we'll get some impact that is at this stage mostly not quantifiable as a result of these films, but those language impacts that are quantifiable are picked up very easily. So, for instance, all of the hype around the 2012 movie or District 9, we pick that out because it's all conscious representations of the same sorts of themes, and then we throw them away. Because bear in mind, we don't look at our data from what is being said at an individual level. We look at what is being said in a vast collection of aggregates. So in order to have that effectively kind of alter our data, we would have to have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of millions of people use those same kinds of words in their conversation in a very particular way for that to leak through into our data. And it seems at this stage wildly improbable that such a thing would occur. Now, on the other hand, there is no doubt that those films exist because the people that produce those films are in the same antenna wave as the themes that are behind them.
Right, right.
So in other words, I believe that they're producing these films now, whether they know it or not, whether it's willful or unwitting, they are producing them because those themes will manifest for us in the future.
So, I mean, basically, in terms of, if we can term it that, the regular Jane and Joe, their experience that they are having on this planet right now, from their perspective, things are going to get really, really, really weird here in the next couple of years then, right?
Yeah, yes, indeed. We've, since about 2003 or 2004, we've had this data set show up that first was under cognitive dissonance, and then we had it under sun disease because it seemed to be connected to the sun, but it was going to be essentially a mental disease that would affect humans. And now we're just calling it surreal. And some people are going to handle it better than others. We're going to get a lot of people in our data sets that are described as just walking along in a crosswalk, for instance, suddenly stopping and having a short circuit in the brain, and they just sort of stand there and drool. And it's a result of the surreality of everything catching up with their mind and sort of shutting them down for a few minutes. And we suspect that there will be some level of manifestation at that kind of a reaction over the planet over these next couple of years as we encounter something that is just going to challenge most people's paradigms. I say most because there are people that are sort of looking for the new ones, and they'll at least be able to integrate it a little bit better.
So in terms of what should we call it, protection or being kind of a little bit safer, the best way to go about it is to actually just be aware and at least have at one point contemplated these ideas that it might possibly be true and it might possibly happen. That will give you a certain kind of protection right there, won't it?
That's my way of thinking, is that the idea is to build those pathways in your brain for when they become necessary. Correct.
Really interesting. And if we go back to this, the question of the alien contact again and so forth, did you mention alien wars as well? Will this imply human beings in this as well? Or are we talking about just other civilization fighting, but we'll be able to be in a position where we can witness this? Or what's going on here?
Well, now we have to be very clear, and I want to say that we don't have any indication that you'll be shooting at space aliens per se. Okay, what we do have is at a very high archetype is the archetype of war. But we have to be aware that war has various meanings and flavors within that archetype, including contention and even nonviolent struggles like Gandhi waged against the British. So all of that is within this war concept, and we don't have enough granularity to have enough specifics. However, what I can tell you at this stage is that there's going to be a contention at many different levels within the human society as we go through the contact experience. And one of the levels of contention may involve actual warfare, but it appears it'll be between competing factions of humans that may be attempting to control an alien technology, so to speak, or to control the interaction with alien technology, rather than humans against aliens. But we also have language at a detail level that suggests for some period of time, I don't know how long, probably months, but I wouldn't suspect years, that people in rural areas will actually arm themselves. This will be more prevalent in the United States than in other areas, but we do show a lot of it in Russia and in Central Europe and over in the steppes, where rural people will arm themselves against nightly abductions or contact by beings they'll find to be reprehensible. Now, and it may be that the meme comes out as a result of contact. It may just be that everybody gets afraid of it and then starts talking about it, and they never actually do it. But we have language to suggest, you know, that a knock on a door in the middle of a night on a rural farm without announcing yourself might be met by a shotgun blast just because they think you're a space alien.
Right, right. Ish. That's just incredible. I mean, I've heard stories as well in regards to fake alien invasions and so forth and the potential threat from an alien force in order to further propel the totalitarian state, the New World Order agenda as well, that these two actually play, put it this way, the powers that be can utilize a situation like that in order to bring lockdown, so to speak, on this planet, and we'll be unable to actually confirm if it indeed is an alien force or not. Any resonance or hints regarding that type of information?
Yes, we do have that, and we have that as a sub-strategy in one of the archetypes within the powers that be entity. I suspect they will indeed use it, but the data that we have around it is that it's going to be a laughable failure. And it may be that it's superseded by real events with real aliens, or that it is such a crude special effect that we all laugh it off as being worse than you would see in a first-generation game.
There we go. And what you described before in terms of taking everything into account is that in order for the picture to make sense, we must view it with a holistic pair of eyes, so to speak. We have to look at everything and incorporate that into the picture in order to understand the picture as best as possible. But beyond that, beyond the already weird, strange, and you know, fantastic, you know, possibilities that we're looking at here in the future years, are there any other kind of unknown parameters that are lurking out there that we haven't even, or you guys haven't even been able to figure out or get make sense of yet?
Yes, there are a number of them that show up in the various data sets where I'm sure it's a case very much like in the 2001 incident where we don't have the appropriate language modeled. And if we did have the appropriate language modeled, I think it would be a little bit more clear. But for instance, let me give you the idea of a particular phenomenon that we don't really have a language for, but we're calling them brain creases. And it comes from the German word for crop circle, which is corn crease. And basically what we're suggesting is that there exists the possibility that in the near future, and might be months away, but probably is more likely a year away, there's going to be a certain discussion level going on about individuals that are receiving in their brains what basically could be considered to be a crop circle or a glyph. And what we're seeing in our data suggests, and it's very difficult to put words to this because we're sure they're not accurately modeled, but the best we can do is to say that maybe the next generation of crop circles is going to be brain-to-brain transmission, and that humans are going to get a whole lot of information as a result of this. This is all corroborated by this cross-subset into our populace entities that's all around this idea of gnosis. And at first I thought the gnosis would be, due to how the data originated, I thought it would be some kind of homegrown sort of a thing. And indeed it may. There may be homegrown discoveries that will produce part of this effect. But nonetheless, there is this external subset that seems to suggest that our brain creases are headed our way, the way that we've got corn creases now. And then there's other things that are even weirder beyond, even weirder than that. One of them is the suggestion that the photon belt idea, or 2,000 years of a golden age, actually exists at a energetic level if we get trapped in the Milky Way. But because we don't have any historical model for that, we just don't really even have a clue as to what words to start adding emotions to even start picking that kind of thing up.
That's really interesting. And you mentioned brain-to-brain transmission. Are you talking about organic telepathy or I guess, materialistic technology here? Do you know?
No, I don't know. What I'm suggesting is that instead of people in England walking around and discovering a giant crop circle in a field, maybe some subset of humanity, maybe on the order of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even millions of people, that particular night, instead of these guys creating a crop circle, they beam information into all these hundreds of thousands of people that particular instant. Ooh. And so you have 100 or more thousands of people. We certainly tens of thousands. Numbers are weird in our work because the internet is filled with numbers, so we have a tendency to throw them out. But the words we're getting that describe the impact of this particular coming phenomena seem to suggest that it would happen to tens of thousands of people at the same time in an instant. And I'm not talking about rapture or being uplifted or any of that, but the effect of this on these individuals at an emotional level is going to be quite engaging, and they'll enjoy it, so to speak. Just as an aside, because of the surety, the certainty that arises of it from contact with the holonomy. But basically, it's going to be like all of a sudden we wake up and there's a discussion in various forums and so on, and it'll eventually get to mainstream media about individuals that all have the same dream at the same instant, that lasts the same length of time, and it includes all these same symbols.
Ooh,
sort of makes sense.
Oh, that's very interesting. Does this have anything to do with the Swirly's software?
No. Insofar as I can tell, it's not at all related. There's no correlation that people that use the Swirly software and spin the crop circles will in any way get a greater level of advantage in this than other than that. The kind of information we get seems to suggest that this is a big external project. And so in that sense, it's like us, we're all the lab rats here, some of whom are going to get all their tails dyed pink, and we're going to recognize that our tails have been dyed pink, but we won't have a clue as to what that pink might mean or how they decided that we would get our particular tails dyed pink as opposed to the guy next to us.
But ultimately, this is done because whatever the force behind this is, want to change us or turn us into something else? What's your take on that?
I don't know. That's speculation. That goes. I don't like answering why questions because the why questions always go to intent.
Yeah.
And I know I've got the intent to go get a cup of coffee, but much beyond that, I don't even know my own intent. So it's speculation as to why they might be doing this. The effect, though, insofar as our data does not seem to be negative. Certainly on an emotional level, all of the people that are involved will perceive it as positive. But to those people that are not perceiving it, the effect, there's going to be a certain level of fear associated with it, almost like a zombie movie starting up in a theater. If you're not, you know, if you see the zombies and you're not one of the zombies, you're a little bit sketchy about the whole thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, again, just to kind of summarize a little bit here, if this isn't true, we're in for a heck of a ride, obviously. And what do you see then in terms of progression of all of this? Will it slowly implemented one thing at a time, or we just bam unfold, you know, as that in the next couple of years here? Or what do you see in terms of timing for all of this?
It's going to be very much like if we were to characterize it and anthropomorphize it, then all of humanity is a single individual standing at the top of a hill, starting to walk down. And in the process of walking down, a few pebbles are knocked loose, which then start a little bit movement of sand, and you step into that sand, your footing is unsure, you trip over a stone, and from that point on, you're just struggling and desperate to recover your footing as you're accelerating down the hill. So it won't happen all at once, but once the whole process starts, you're going to have to be on your toes not to end up face first in it.
Yeah, that's right. And personally, I'd kind of, we'll see what happens if and when we are into it, but I'd certainly, from my point of view right now, welcome a change like that and very much enjoy the ride, although I definitely understand that there will be some kind of difficult dealing with your relationship to all of this, obviously, and process it psychologically and emotionally, obviously. But from your point of view, do you intend to enjoy the ride here, or are you scared of all of this?
I'm a paranoid fellow by nature, but not as bad as like Igor, the guy who works with me, who chews his mustache off in frustration constantly. But no, I'm of the opinion that it's your personal karma that will determine how it all happens to you as an individual. And I'm quite fascinated because of the nature of our work. I'm desperate for surprise, and I love seeing change manifest, not only to plot against to see how accurate we were, but to actually find areas that are different and get that little surprise. So I'm going to enjoy all of this. Yes, it's going to be quite fascinating.
Oh, indeed. And Cliff, all I want to say here is that we obviously love to have you back at some point here and talk more about this stuff and the more that happens and is discovered and so forth. So we definitely leave this invitation out there for you to pick up on or not. But we definitely want you to mention again your website so people know where to go and how we can follow along then in the reports that you guys are producing.
Well, we've got the report out there now that covers the period of time from now basically through to about November of 2010 with some detail. And we've got some real interesting stuff in it. So you can go to halfpasthuman.com and pick up that report. But we're all going to be living this starting October 25 onward. And I think you'll be able to wake up on the morning of the 25th or the 26th. We could be off by a day. And then and see the change in the language. And then you'll know that our ride's accelerating. We've just stumbled over that little bit of rock, and we're about to start heading down that hill.
Very exciting stuff indeed. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Cliff. I really appreciate you taking the time and spending it with us here today.
Sure. Yeah, no problem at all. In the future, after we get into some of this, if it's all holding together, I'll certainly be quite happy to come back.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much, Cliff.
Thank you.
That's our program with Cliff High. Really interesting hearing from Cliff and the material that the WebBot has brought forth. We will obviously follow the story and keep you up to date and invite Cliff back on the program. Stay tuned to RedIceCreations.com for much more coming up. Part 2 with Andrew D. Bashago on Mars, Eldon Taylor on mass media persuasion, and author Richard Doland on ufology. Thank you for listening and for being a member. We appreciate your support, and until next program, keep an eye on the website for the latest.